Thank you for downloading this programme. In this edition of The Bottom Line, we're looking at executive coaching, what it is, what it does, and when it fails. Hello and welcome to the programme. If you could be a fly on a wall and observe what goes on in private, in business, there's one relationship you might want to eavesdrop into. It's the one between a senior executive and their coach or mentor. You maybe didn't know executives needed coaches. This is not a sporting relationship, but many business people do employ someone to serve as a guide to managing business and to managing life in general. Coaching and mentoring has itself been a fast-growing industry, and we're going to find out all about it today. I've two clients with me, but first we'll meet someone who comes from the other side. Jonathan Bowman-Perks is an executive coach and mentor who's worked individually with over 60 boardroom members. And in fact, you don't call yourself an executive coach, I think, Jonathan.
I tend to refer to myself as a trusted leadership advisor, because I think leadership is the skill I bring from many years of being in the field. And people do actually want advice, but they don't have to take it.
Right. Can we call you a coach for
you
the
can
duration?
Call me a coach.
Just trusted leadership advisor.
It'd be a bit too wordy, wouldn't it? Just coach would be great.
So who are some of your clients?
I think for the fact that they're public figures and they're CEOs, I think they'd be quite comfortable being kept out of this, but are happy to share their stories and anecdotes which don't reveal who they are.
Right. But what kind of businesses are we talking about?
We're talking about all the big sort of FTSE 250 companies, from sort of vice chancellors of universities, CEOs of tech companies, banks, professional services firms.
And just briefly, how did you get into this? Because you were in the Army at one stage. What's your resume?
So, yes, I was 20 years as an Army officer, British Army officer, and then PricewaterhouseCoopers, then on to IBM, then to be a managing director of a PLC. And then finally, one of my clients says, you know, why don't you do this for yourself? I went, crikey, didn't think I could. She goes, yeah, do it. So I did 6 years ago, and that's been the best thing I've ever done.
Okay. Well, my second guest, we're moving over to the client side now, is Melanie Richards, who's vice chairman and a partner of KPMG UK. What do you actually do at KPMG, Melanie?
Well, I'm on the board. I joined the board 3 years ago and was made vice chair just a year ago. And I advise companies on raising capital, having spent 18 years prior to joining KPMG 15 years ago in banking, dare I say it. So I help companies raise capital. I still do that some of the time. But a lot of my work now is around client relationship development and working with the board on strategy and so forth.
Right. Now, your use of, is it, it's coaches in your case?
Funnily enough, I don't make a huge distinction, and we'll probably get into that, this question of coaching or mentoring. But I do use a coach. He calls himself a coach, so I'm happy to call him a coach for this purpose. A guy called Pete Hamill. I've known him for about 12 years. And he and I have had a sort of an on-off relationship, nothing bad about it, but just that sometimes I've had periods of time where it's been very useful to have somebody to step outside of the business and talk to, and sometimes I haven't.
And so give us an example of something Pete has taught you.
You know, just to be very clear, I'm not sure that it's a teaching, that sounds like a child-parent relationship. It's not that sort of relationship. It's a peer relationship. And it's not a question of teaching. It's probably a question of opening your eyes to different perspectives. And one particular thing he introduced me to, for example, was there's a guy who teaches at Harvard called Ronnie Heifetz, and he has a book on adaptive leadership. And he kind of taught me the value of understanding the difference between allies and confidants. And I think actually it's quite obvious. An ally is somebody that you're working in close collaboration with and you're maybe working towards a common goal. A confidant is somebody that you really confide in and give all of your maybe potential secrets to. And sometimes people get confused with that. And I think it's actually very rare to have real confidants, or should be rare, strangely enough, in the office, because mostly you're working towards a common goal. And actually people don't need to know every intimate detail of your life.
OK, well, let me introduce my third guest, Gavin Patterson, who's chief executive of BT Group. Gavin, I think you consider you yourself to be a client of mentoring rather than coaches. Is that right? Or is this maybe I'm making a distinction where there isn't one?
Well, the people I use like to call themselves as mentors. So if that suits them, that I'm happy to use that term.
So what, just describe when and how much you've taken part in.
I'm, as you know, the CEO of BT, and have been for the last almost 3 years. And during that period, I've used a mentor, Roger Carr.
Who himself has had a very notable business career, actually.
Exactly.
He's chairman of quite a few FTSE companies.
Indeed. Chairman of BAE.
BAE Systems.
Yeah, for example. And I think it has helped manage the journey through some of these transitions. So when I first joined the BT board in 2008, I had two mentors then, Niall Fitzgerald and David Simon. And then
so again, worked with we're
them
talking,
for a couple of years.
We're talking of quite senior people with quite senior business roles. I mean, Niall
exactly.
Fitzgerald was Unilever and
David Simon was BP.
Yeah.
Obviously, we were going into a recession. The company had some problems at the time. It was my first board appointment. And you're entering, increasingly entering an area where you've really got no experience. And the relationships that you have are completely new. They're not, you don't always, certainly as a CEO, you don't have any peers per se in the company. Yeah. And I think that's part of the benefit to somebody like me. These are people who've been through the experience that I was going through or I'm going through at the moment, are able to just help you think through some of the challenges that you face.
So BT has very recently sealed the deal with EE, a large takeover, a big mobile unit coming into BT Group. Would you, for example, go to a mentor with something like that happening in your company? Is that an example of how you might?
It's a very good example. So I've been working with Roger Carr as my mentor. And one of the reasons I chose to work with Roger is that he knows a lot about M&A, and by that I mean mergers and acquisitions. And there were particular moments where, you know, I needed to understand what were the tactics to play and how to ensure that we got the right price and ultimately we got the one we wanted. So.
So just before we get into a general conversation about this, what if I said to you, I thought you were paid to make these decisions and it's kind of Gavin Patterson who runs BT. And it actually sounds like you're not subcontracting it, but it could be said that you're sort of just paying someone else to make decisions that you should make. I mean, why don't we employ the coach to make these decisions or the mentor to make the decisions?
Let's be very clear. I make the decisions, but many of the decisions are things that are finely balanced. And it helps to talk to somebody who may well have been in this situation before. And the nature of being a CEO, and certainly a CEO of a listed company, is it's a very visible job. There aren't that many people around you can talk these things through. You have a relationship with your chairman. I have a very good relationship with my chairman. But sometimes it helps to be able to take a different point of view and just work through your thinking of how you make the right choice and you weigh up the various pros and cons. And sometimes it's about a question of priorities.
Well, we've got the sort of, I think, the gist of where each of you are. Two clients, as I say, one in the business now. Just talk me through each of you, you know, the basic practicalities of this. How often do you see a coach or a mentor? How long is a session? Who does most of the talking? Are you lying on a bed or are you sitting in a chair? I mean, just come on, describe to me the nuts and bolts.
I mean, I'll kick off because I said that it's an on-off relationship for me. You know, this isn't something that I have to do every month slavishly. It's all about sort of when I feel like I might value having a conversation. And for me, I try and make sure that it's at least a couple of hours because otherwise it probably, you kind of don't get going. And I think the interesting observation, which might be, and my coach might say I bore him, but I think most of the talking is done by me because some of it is unravelling the things that you're thinking and hearing and whether it's, you know, a complex issue you're trying to unwind or think about. Just talking about it and having that space to talk about it is part of the value of sitting down with somebody.
Yeah, and I sort of build on that. The coach and mentor, in many ways, it's a similar output that you're helping, you know, if I was working with you or Gavin, helping you come up with your own answers. Mm. And someone once said that a coach has some great questions for your answers and a mentor has some great answers for your questions.
Gavin, what are just the basic practicalities?
I've used mentors for specific periods, usually transitions into new jobs. So it's typically a couple of years max. And then I've seen them for an hour and a half each for four times a year. It's always in their office.
Sorry, four times a year?
Yes.
Mm. Oh, that's less than I would have thought.
No.
Well, it will vary. This is the thing. It's bespoke. It's designed. So if I was doing a coaching program with a CEO, say, we would co-design it. And I say, what works for you? Often they say like every 3 weeks and let's meet up for 90 minutes. I mean, that tends to work quite well.
And it's one thing that's worth drawing out. It's partly talking through decisions that you're facing at work, but it's also helping you manage the other things in your life and get the right balance in your life. You know, to be effective in your day job, you've got to make sure your health is good, your relationships are good, you're looking after the other responsibilities that you have. And if you get them out of kilter, then your work can suffer. And so it isn't simply talking through business decisions.
No, that's a good point. It's that organisational health is a big thing these days.
But he's talking about marital health as well. He's talking about family life, work-life balance, and all the things in your life that you maybe don't...
They will come up, but you've got to be careful that you're not a therapist. That's not what coaching or mentoring is about, but you will talk about the whole of you, because it's an integrated thing. You bring yourself to work, and you take yourself...
I also think it's more than that. I think therapists are trying to deal with a specific issue and it goes on for and on and on. I think there's a vast difference between that and a sort of coaching mentoring relationship, which is actually they'll be very different, a really wide range of issues that you'll debate. So one can be about sort of work relationships. The other can be about how am I balancing what I'm doing in the office with what I'm trying to do at home. As you become more senior and you have more responsibility, the lines become progressively more blurred between family and work life. I mean, they have to become more blurred, sadly. You know, that those are just the facts. And I always think that this idea that work-life balance exists is probably not a reality. I think the truth is we make things fit. Sometimes work has to take priority, sometimes family has to take priority, and you have to make those things work. And you're absolutely right. My coach isn't some sort of therapist or my mentor. You know, he's actually, it's a fact of life that those things come together.
Mm. Look, in most of these cases, I'm guessing the company is paying. Gavin, in your case, BT is paying for you to receive this advice. And it's appropriate that they should. It's part of your self-improvement and performing your function as well as you can. Can I just ask, who is the client? Are you the client or is BT the client? And if there's a conflict, I mean,
this is a good point, actually. It works best when I'm the client, but I'm involving my boss so that there is a relationship for the mentor to be able to check the context of some of the conversations. It doesn't mean breaking confidentiality, but it's if there isn't a connection back into the company, sometimes... You know, I've seen these types of relationships go off course.
I try and have boundaries to it, so it might be maximum of a year, after which time we have a sort of break clean 6 months to a year. Yeah. If they want to come back again, and often I encourage them to go and work with somebody else. Yeah. And your point, Gavin, it's a triangle. So it's between the organisation or your boss, the coachee, the executive, and the coach. And you've got to make sure who's paying for this and are you delivering value to your organisation rather than having a nice chat in the room about your life and your future aspiration to leave the organisation. What are you adding back?
Well, just while you've got us on that subject, how much does it cost? How much do you charge? I know it's very
similar to when you look at perhaps Magic Circle lawyers versus the local solicitor. It's going to be a complete bandwidth of different things. So it depends the work you're doing. So you can't say it is this price. It varies very much, but... Mm. You pay for what you get. And if you want someone who's really going to help you make the big shifts that Melanie had to or Gavin had to, they will be paying more than someone who wants to have a talk about life coaching.
So the very, very top ones, though, I read we're talking tens of thousands per client per year, sort of 60,000.
No, I've not heard of that. I don't know where
that would be more. It would be less than that.
Oh, yeah, I think so. It depends how long you're going to be working with them. Are you doing some team building? Are you doing some 360 as well? But the good coaches can get well paid, but it depends on how good they are. Because if they're not good, they find they're out of business very quickly.
What I find interesting about your reflections on all of this is how difficult it is to find time to have a structured, but if you like, not directly relevant conversation. Isn't what you're doing finding the time, putting it in your diary, marking out 90 minutes or 2 hours, and say, this is actually where I'm going to think about stuff in a way that I should think about it. And if I don't put it in the diary and pay someone to do it, I'm not going to do it.
Quite as binary as that, I don't think. I think you're right in a sense of it is what you're meant to be doing anyway at times in the week, but it's not the only time you do that. There's no question about that. Yeah. But it does help to have scheduled time. And good mentors or good coaches really force you to put in the preparation beforehand to think through the issues that you really want to talk about and be prepared to talk through some of the questions and dilemmas. So you don't just rock up and, you know, ask your mentor to solve the problem on the spot. It's all in the preparation for you and the mentor.
I'm fascinated listening to the kind of things you think you get out of it. Is there an element of it's quite difficult when you become quite senior to get constructive negative feedback? It's obviously in a job like yours, Gavin, I can think very easy to get unconstructive.
Every single day.
Unconstructive feedback. But it is quite, is it a little bit about paying someone to tell you the blunt truth? Is that an element in it? I mean, I find in life in general, people either be insulting or they'll be encouraging, but it's quite hard for people to say you need to do this a little differently.
If I look at where I am at the moment and as a CEO, there is no job that I've ever been in that prepares you for being a CEO. And it is because your proximity to everybody else in your organisation is completely unique. As you go through the organisation, you're used to working across the organisation. You have peers you can exchange ideas with and get advice from. But as the CEO, you don't have any peers. You have a relationship with your board, but your board are there to challenge you and push you and critique you constantly. And your relationship with your chairman is very different from your relationship with any other boss you've had. So there are just certain moments, I think, in your career, and this is one for me, where it just helps to have a different perspective. And some of the decisions you come across, frankly, you never expected to have to make. And that's why it's helpful, yeah.
Hold those thoughts. Let me just remind everyone, you're listening to The Bottom Line. We're discussing, well, one of the ways companies get the best from their top executives through mentors and coaches. And with me, Jonathan Bowman-Perks, a mentor and coach, Melanie Richards, Vice Chairman, KPMG UK, and Gavin Patterson, Chief Executive of the BT Group. So in your careers, the two clients here, Gavin and Melanie, you have lots of relationships. You've got your chairman, if you're chief executive, that's an absolutely key relationship. You've got your chief financial officer who'll talk about financial things. Does the coach relationship not sometimes interfere with those other relationships? I mean, let's call this the jealous colleague, but does that ever arise that the colleague's like, oh God, he's back at the coach again getting all this rubbish advice? And
you know, one of the things I'd say to you is one of my apprehensions of even about appearing today was that not many people know I've got a coach. Okay.
Right.
It's not like something you go and publicise and tell everybody and they're present. I mean, what Jonathan was describing is, you know, some visibility sometimes with what he's doing. But, you know, my coach isn't really very visible to people in my organisation. So the prospect of them interfering is nil. I think it can get unhealthy if people are coaching for too long and too intensively. Yeah. And then when it becomes visible and present, then actually that's not coaching or even mentoring. That's becoming part of the team and potentially part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. When the relationship is working well with your mentor, it's completely invisible to everybody else. So that they just hopefully see you become more effective or a better leader.
It's not secret. It's just it's
not
it's
secret.
Not publicised. You know, you don't make.
But
a
Melanie's
thing.
Absolutely right. You don't go around talking about it. And if others feel as though there's somebody else pulling the strings, and I've never been through that myself, hopefully, but I've seen it in other situations, then it does become toxic, I think. Yeah. But you know, when it works really well, they're just nudging and helping you get perspective on things and ensuring that you make decisions or helping you make decisions in a very timely way.
But yeah. It's interesting, Gavin, because you described very usefully your relationship with Roger Carr. You're involved in a merger and acquisition, and he's been through that, so he can give you perspective and he can give you some insight into what the egregious mistakes are that you want to avoid and some tactical advice. That is quite specific, isn't it? I mean, and the rest of the team may think, why don't we invite Roger Carr in so we can all benefit from his experience and have a team talk and work this out together rather than Gavin running off and doing it on his own.
He doesn't replace any of the other advisors, and I can assure you there's no shortage of advice. As a CEO, you're overwhelmed with it sometimes. But the role you have with your mentor is specific to you and the role you should be playing within the process, in the example I've been given. Mm. It's making you conscious that every move you make or don't make is sending a signal. And sometimes you don't get a 360-degree view of that unless somebody else is pointing it out to you.
And I think this raises a very interesting shift that's going on in business. In the past, sometimes remedial poor performers were given a coach. Oh, you're not performing well. We'll give you a coach to sort you out. And that created such a bad name. So people never mentioned that they had a coach. It was the thing you don't talk about. I just do not do remedial. I once recently did, big mistake. I mean, the person I was given was what I'd call a white-collar sociopath. And she was a bully. And I actually should have turned the assignment down.
So hang on, the company says, we've got a problem because yep. this person is a bit of a bully.
Yes.
Let's send her off to Jonathan to be coached out
and,
of that.
And I just don't do that. I just.
But why not? That forms. Sounds like a very useful
no,
thing you could do.
No, because when you've got a sociopath, you cannot ever change them. They just get them out of the organisation. I mean, you will not change them. And if they are bullying, that needs to be addressed. Don't invest your money in the poor performers. Invest your money in the high performers who can do 5% improvement by them is massive.
But this is interesting. So what happened when you...
Oh, big mistake. So I should have smelt a rat. So I was given by the organisation, you know, well, you know, she's making a lot of money, but, you know, can you please work with her? Because her behaviour is appalling. And, you know, we've got 3 cases of people claiming bullying by her. And I should have gone, no. I should have gone, no. In fact, when I met her, she was absolutely charming. But once you're in there and in their snare, they're just playing a game to actually stay in the organisation and carry on getting their bonuses. And I then found later on that I was starting to get bullied myself by her. And I had to take it back to my own supervisor. I took it back to my own supervisor and say, what's going on? I'm feeling really bad. And she said, you are being caught up in exactly what she's doing to everybody else. Call it out. And I did. And I actually said, look, we should finish this. No, no, no. She said, I'll change. Promised to change. The last assignment, it was the last session after that. And 6 months later, she was fired for bullying.
You must have quite a lot of clients, not just the bullying ones. You must have quite a lot of clients, Jonathan, who are not getting anything out of it or not coming to it in the right spirit.
Well, this is where we talk about the process. If you have a process where, firstly, you're checking on commitment. Am I committed to the client? And is the client committed to me? Because if someone is saying, you've got to go and have coaching, I just don't take those anymore. I said, if you're not up for it, I'm not up for it. Don't waste the money. If this person doesn't want to be coached, spend your money elsewhere. I'm not going to do it. It's not me.
But there's a difference, isn't there, when you describe that between somebody being recommended that they should get a coach or being sent to coach for, as you put it, remedial. You know, some people haven't even thought about what the benefits of coaching might be. And in fact, it takes them a little bit of time to understand what a mentor can do, what a coach can do. So I think it's a bit more nuanced than maybe you've just described, because it's not as simple as they've been told to get a coach. They may well have been, and they may well be well worth coaching. It's just that the basis and the start of the relationship is somewhat different.
Yeah. And it's one other thing to reinforce. It doesn't replace the relationship you have with your boss.
No.
Yeah. It's not a way of delegating responsibility to a third party for the development of an individual.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's not. You've all been so keen to explain coach not equal to therapist, very different to therapy. But it sort of brings us to the mindset and the psychology of people in senior business positions. Because are you the same as everybody else? Or are there characteristics of chief executives that are somehow different to other people? In other words, would coaching be useful for everybody? It's just that most people can't afford it. Mm. Or is there something about the chief executive mindset or the chief executive role that makes coaching more important at that level than for an ordinary
people? I think coaching is important at every level, and we offer coaching right from the bottom end of our organisation right to the top end of the organisation. It just comes in very, very different forms. And there's a reason for that. And you know, I always get worried that this notion that, you know, chief execs or senior people are ethereal beings who have some special need. I really don't think that that's true. I think that the difference is the type of support that you might be giving to somebody at a more junior level, it'll just be different because it has to be different because they're dealing with different questions. And yeah. I think the one thing that always strikes me is, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, Gavin, is, you know, people don't arrive in their positions at whatever level fully baked. I suspect you as a broadcaster, you know, 15 years ago, you were doing different things than you are today.
You don't have to go back 15 years.
We're all evolving as human beings. And I think, at whatever level you sit in an organisation, you think you've earned the right to stop learning is the moment when you should shut the door because, you know, we're all learning. And I think even more so now because nothing's static. The world's not static.
American psychiatrist, academic Nasir Gemi, he wrote a terrific book about leadership and the psychological conditions of the various real leaders, you know, Winston Churchill and Roosevelt. And he kind of retrospectively analyses their psychology and their dysfunctions. And he finds that a very high proportion of good leaders have what would be considered sort of to be sort of mentally abnormal conditions, whether it's extreme depression or bipolar.
I think he's talking about you, Gary.
Or whether it's...
I didn't realise we were going into personal feedback.
But it is interesting, isn't it? It is interesting. And I just wonder whether that is something that means it does make sense at your kind of level to sit down and talk.
I think it isn't to do with the person. It is to do with the point in their life that they're going through. So I agree with Melanie. There are people at all stages of life who would benefit from coaching or mentoring, particularly through transitions. And CEOs are no different from that. But not every CEO would benefit from mentoring. And I certainly believe not every... Well, most CEOs don't need a mentor all the time. Mm. You know, there's a period of time that it's important for me, but I don't expect it to be a constant resource that I use.
Your experience as a coach, Jonathan?
I got approached by someone on LinkedIn, said, look, you know, really keen to become a CEO. Can I come work with you? So, okay, we met up. He came to my office.
He was keen to be a CEO.
Yeah,
he wasn't a CEO.
No, he wasn't a CEO. He was very ambitious to be a CEO. And we were chatting away and out of some humour, I sort of laughed about, you know, the white collar sociopaths. And he said, well, what are those? You know, what kind of criteria do they have? I said, well, funny enough, I've actually done a sheet of the kind of things you'll see when you can spot one. And he read through it and he went, these are like my boss. He said, can you teach me how to become like them? And I said, you are joking me, are you? He said, no, seriously. I said, no, I will not do that. That's not what I do. And out, go,
leave.
Next. We didn't work together.
It's a fascinating world. We better leave it there. Thank you to my guests. Jonathan Bowman-Perks, a coach and mentor. Melanie Richards, vice chairman of KPMG UK. And Gavin Patterson, chief executive of BT Group. Do visit our website, bbc.co.uk/bottomline. You'll find details of how to download the programme there. And join me again next week when I will have more guests. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening. The programme was produced by Ruth Edwards in association with the Open University. And if you enjoyed this edition of The Bottom Line, you might be interested in other BBC Radio programmes, like More or Less, a weekly podcast that looks at the numbers behind stories in the news.